This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to yet another episode of the Bobo and Flex Show. My name is Bobo and I am your host and I'm with the beautiful Flex. Flex,
hey,
how are you feeling today?
I am feeling accomplished. I'm trying to extend my vocab because good, fine, well, bad is just so basic. Like, we didn't
really
read all these books to be saying good. I'm feeling accomplished and I'm feeling, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, aligned. Like, the mentality is matching, the personality is matching, the output is matching, the expression. I'm feeling aligned. Just for right now, though, so it hasn't been like an everyday feeling, but right now.
Yeah.
I'm feeling
aligned. How did you get to feeling aligned? Like, how can we also hop on this wave?
Bitch, you know what I did? I started meditating.
Look at her. Look at her on her Eckhart Tolle. Okay. Okay, Deepak Chopra.
Come on.
We see you.
I was like, look, all right. Remember a couple of episodes I don't know if, how long ago we spoke about this, but you know, if you have like physical pain or ailments, you've got cramps, you've got a headache, you kind of know what you need to do to fix those things. Drink water, take medicine, sleep, rest, whatever. But for the things outside of that, the intangible, the existential, you know, the things like purpose and alignment, that's all like stuff that requires a different skill set that I don't have. So I started meditating and I started just doing more self-development, but actually practicing what I was learning. So like if one day I was learning about like the power of responding and not reacting, I would now assess all the interactions in my day when I was prone to reacting. And I react all the time. It may not seem like it, but in my head, like I'm doing a lot of reacting and then stifling and then responding. But I want to get to the point where the first reaction in my head is of response, not reaction. Pause, respond.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of brain training. But then it goes back to like, you know, that TikTok that I reference. Oh, look at me. I'm always referencing TikTok. But the one that
no,
that
I love 50- it. TikTok is our Bible now.
Literally. 50% of conflict is your fault. And not in a victim-blaming way, but just in a way that helps you create responsibility over the interactions that you have.
Oh, my God.
So you can be
I
more
love
active
this.
Participant in your life. So if you just assume
Bitch,
that
yeah.
whenever you're feeling some sort of like annoyance or aggravation, that half of it is you. And so you can now adjust how you respond, how you feel, what you think. And then the rest is other people, which you know you can't control. But that's fine because you've done everything you can on your end.
Yes. I love this too. I've had a week of learning how to deal with conflict better. I always thought of myself as someone that was really good at conflict resolution. Then I realized I'm actually quite toxic. When it comes, like, I'm actually quite a toxic person. Literally. I realized that, like, yeah, like, it's so easy when you're in a state of, like, anger to be like, no, it's that person's... But I've recently been realizing that a lot of my conflicts come from the fact that I'm very critical of people. Yeah, and I didn't realize that I was because I guess I'm very critical of myself, but I didn't realize that, like, my level of critique towards myself is abnormal. And so doing that to other people is, like, really hard. Yeah, and, like, I don't know. I just get into fights with people or, like, arguments or whatever. And... not understand like why they're always offended and I'd be like everyone's so sensitive. Yeah, I've really been spending these past 2 weeks of just learning how to fight properly and like accepting that bitch all the conflicts that you've had. I've just had a very conflicty month. And I'm like, bitch, all the conflicts that you've had, like, it's been half your fault, which is really liberating. It's so freeing.
What would you say is your tip or advice on how to argue properly?
Ooh, I think I really love when I get to the end of an argument and I'm like, oh, okay, so neither of us were wrong. That was just your, like, you saw it this way and then I saw it this way. And that's, like, there was actually no truth. So I think, like, trying to be right is the biggest killer of relationships. Like, I've just gotten to a point where I don't give a fuck about, like, facts anymore. When it comes to, like, people's emotions and feelings, because I used to be that bitch. I used to be that scientific bitch. That's now, like, now we're doing logical debates during an emotional argument. And I'm like, okay, there's a time and place. Like, maybe that's not the time. Yeah, so I think divesting from being right and just literally just trying to see the other person's perspective. And then really, and this is the part that I'm really shitty at, is like being accountable for the ways that I think for me, like, whenever someone tells me that I didn't communicate something properly, I'm like, no, I communicate for a living. There's, bitch, there's no way. But I've had to, like, humble myself and be like, no, like, just because I communicate for a living, that doesn't mean that I'm like the guru of it's also another thing.
The scale of how we communicate is a different skill. Like, the communication that we do for a living is a far different skill than building actual human connection. We just have to learn, or we have learned, how to articulate our thoughts. That's like half of the battle.
Honestly, and I really thought that was all of the battle, because I've always been someone that, like, prides myself on being really articulate and being very clear and being very detailed. Like, I'm the I tell people really, like, exactly what I want, and I'm always very clear. And I attribute that in part to having, like, an expansive vocabulary, so I can be very clear. And also in part to just being self-aware. But like you said, like, that's actually just half the battle. I think being someone that is very clear and direct doesn't necessarily mean that you're someone that is well-versed in emotions. And that's, like, I'm well-versed in my own emotions. And I think I have that expectation of everyone else. But I've also always assumed that because I'm hyper aware of what I'm feeling and why I'm feeling it at any moment in time. And I always thought, like, that must mean I'm also aware of, like, what other people are feeling. But that's actually not the case. So I don't know. I think I'm very good at communicating with myself, but not that good at communicating with other humans, which is, like, another thing.
Don't you love learning?
I know. No, I love that. I love that.
I was having this conversation with my boyfriend about the ways we're very similar and dissimilar, because on paper we have a lot of, it's more like our outcomes are quite similar, but our motivations towards our outcomes are really different. So we both like learning things, right? But he likes to learn a little about everything. He's like a really well-versed person in general stuff, not even general, right, but like a lot of things. So he can tell you about economics and history and like all this shit that I'm not interested in because I don't really care. So he's really interested in understanding the world around him, and I'm interested in understanding myself. So I know a lot about very little, and he knows a little about a lot. I'm like, oh, I can see why we like often don't like the things that we both find important, like conversation wise, not morals wise, they miss, because I'm like, oh, I don't want to talk about that deeply. I want to talk about this deeply. And he's like, why does that matter? Like, if we understand the economics, then that conversation is important. Like, I don't really care about fiat currency. And he's like, no, it matters because. And then, like, we both need to be alone. But he needs to be alone because he's fundamentally an introvert who needs time to recharge. And I need to be alone because I feel as though so much of my life is too externalized that I need to, like, take back time. Like, it's
Okay, yeah.
Like, it's my duty to reclaim the time that I would have spent doing the other things that I didn't really want to do at that time. And so I'm like, oh, I see. That's like two sides of the same coin, but very different.
Yeah.
So learning about oneself is so powerful. It's humbling in a really nice way, especially when you can apply the things that you're learning. And it's like having the preferred outcome. Like you now learning that you might not be the best at conflict resolution is meaning that you're trying to be better. And that's obviously going to have a positive impact on the communication that you have with people.
No, honestly, it's also like the realization that like there is no one perfect way of doing conflict resolution. Like, it's like something I've been like compatibility. We've always thought of as something that's all encompassing. But it's actually very granular. Like, you can be compatible with someone as far as your interests, but you're completely incompatible with the way that you disagree. Mm-hmm. And, like, it can literally get that granular. And it makes me wonder, like, how much teaching and learning should we be doing in our relationships? Like, at what point is it, like...
much.
Yeah, right? Like...
I don't think we're encouraged to do enough.
Honestly, because I think Hollywood has really romanticized and glamorized the idea that it's romantic for people to intuit what you like and to intuit what you don't like. And so a lot of people don't go into relationships expecting to teach and to learn. And anytime they have to teach and learn, they become impatient because they're like, well, this takes the romance out of it. You should just know.
Or they think the teaching and learning moments are a relationship breakdown. Like, we shouldn't have to do this teaching and learning because we're compatible.
Exactly. And I'm so like, wild. No, bitch. Like, compatibility is something we create. I feel like when you start dating someone, you should maybe be like 30% compatible, but everything else is like created compatibility.
I think maybe in theory you should be 30%, but it should feel like you're more compatible than you are. Only because, how do I explain this? I feel like, I personally feel like in a lot of dating stories I hear, people aren't compatible enough. Like, they're acutely aware of their incompatibilities far too early on. And that to me feels like a clear indicator that it's just not going to work out in the way that you'd like. But if you feel more compatible than you are, in the sense that you think that you manage conflict in the same way, you communicate in the same way, you know each other's love languages, you've read their birth chart, you get it. And then you find out, oh, wait, they were raised in a different environment and therefore we don't see child rearing in the same way. Or their parents are Republicans and they have a really centrist view on the world. And suddenly you're like, okay, maybe we aren't that compatible on core beliefs, but there's a learning we can do because the foundation is one of this one of perceived compatibility. I think it's far easier to work from that as opposed to knowing on like the first date that the person you're dating is like a little bit homophobic where you're like,
They
like Bernie Sanders.
I feel you. There's actually this really interesting dilemma that someone posted in our Facebook group that reminded me of like everything that I've been trying to learn about communication lately. Okay, let me just read it and then you'll let me know your thoughts. So this girl says, so my friend is pregnant and she told me she was trying to induce a miscarriage by taking a large amount of a specific herb. She initially said she wasn't ready for a child. And when I asked if she'd spoken to anyone else, she told me she didn't want to tell her sister, who would probably bully her into keeping this child. Because her sister is a diehard vegan, anti-vaxxer, pro-Trump, the pharmaceutical industry is trying to kill us, like all that type of shit. So a couple of days pass and my friend tells me that she cannot fathom the idea of a clinical abortion because she doesn't think it's morally correct to choose the outcome of another person's life. I then asked her, well, what's the difference in morality between a clinical abortion and a self-induced miscarriage if the intended outcome is ultimately the same? I've also said to her, I'm happy for you no matter what choice you take. I literally have no judgment. I just noticed a contradiction in her statement and felt a responsibility to let her know. So the question here is, she's now stopped talking to me after I asked her that question. Was that rude of me to ask that question? Like, was that not okay? Background info about me. I've had 2 abortions myself and cannot stress how much I don't care whatever life path she chooses, because ultimately any decision she makes for herself, I support. I just think on a philosophical level, there's no moral difference in trying an at-home DIY abortion versus a clinical one. So I thought this was really interesting also because of the responses. A lot of the responses were, well, you're not objectively an asshole. You're just, because she's essentially asking, was I being an asshole for asking her like why she's contradicting herself and why she thinks inducing a miscarriage is morally superior to having an abortion. Yeah. And a lot of the responses to her question was, well, you're not objectively an asshole. It just isn't the place to be doing intellectual debates when someone is in emotional distress. And that was really interesting to me because I am the type of person to be doing intellectual debates when someone is in. Yeah, like if that was my friend, I would have also been like, why not just get an abortion? Like, what's the difference? And these are like the type of arguments that I get into with people where it's like, no, that just wasn't the right time to be asking me that question.
Yeah.
So it started an argument in the comment section where half of the people were like, no, you weren't wrong, but you were kind of an asshole for doing philosophical debates when she's in such big emotional distress. And everyone else was like, no, you were completely right in asking her that because she's deluding herself into thinking that like she's doing something morally superior and the cognitive dissonance will kill her. Like, as a friend, right, it is your moral duty to have those hard conversations, even during those hard times. But yeah, what do you think about that? Like, do you think there is a time and place for something as deep as this, where it's like, A, her health is at risk. She's clearly not thinking straight because she's in such, like, there's clearly a contradiction there. But she's clearly not in the emotional state to be able to think logically and think through this decision that she's making. But do you have a moral obligation as a friend to set aside your philosophical and intellectual concerns and like comfort her even at her own demise? I don't know. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I say this because I can see the dissonance of the effectiveness of philosophical conversations in environments where they're not the norm. And so like in the space of this podcast, it is the norm to be having those very high level philosophical, you know, Twitter academia discussions because we've created that environment and dynamic. And it's actually expected that you would look at situations in that way in favor of the very like normal human way to look at situations, which is through hypocrisy and through contradiction. But I have become acutely aware of like how different that is outside of any, like outside of the space that we've curated. It is the most tone deaf and like juvenile thing to do, to prioritize what we know over somebody's reality in that moment, especially because in that discussion, the stakes weren't high for the person who wanted to prove a point. Know what you know and leave it at that. Like the kind of distress you put on someone by trying to be right when you could just be accommodating, it takes very little. And I think that there could have been, and there would have been, a far better opportunity to be like, but don't you think that? And in that moment, it just wasn't right. I don't think she wasn't an asshole, but I find that a lot of the like critical thinking skills and tools that we use are not teaching us empathy in any way. And they're not actually teaching us how to properly connect with people so that like these themes are easily understood and comprehended.
Right.
But I don't think it's every day, take the high road, let somebody say something contradictory and let it go. But I also think that in that situation, it didn't need to be it was just too spicy, too juicy that it had to go. It's the same. It's how I feel when people want to start doing philosophical about race, where I'm just like, okay, this isn't the time to be but didn't he have a criminal record?
So wasn't it every day?
And it's like, okay, I get where this is coming from. So let's just agree that perhaps I'm too emotional or too close to this topic to have a philosophical debate with you, someone who is so detached from this discussion.
Yeah. I also think what I'm realizing is that by and large, there are two ways that people process their emotions. So some people process their emotion literally emotionally, like they feel their emotions. And then other people process their emotions intellectually, like they have to think through them and like sort them. So when I'm in like a state of emotional distress, I need someone to like intellectualize with me. I need to sort through my emotions in my head before I can like get to the point of feeling and like all that jazz. And I just assumed that everyone was like that.
Yeah.
But that's actually not the case, which is why I think I saw this. There's this meme going around where like someone texted their boyfriend or their friend just, yeah, they were in distress about something. I forgot what it is. And the boyfriend responded, okay, are you in the feeling stage or are you ready for solutions right now? Which is which is at this point what I'm going to start doing when people are in a place of distress. Because it's actually not everyday solutions. But I do tend to intellectualize emotions, which can really come across as like unempathetic and like uncaring, when I think for a lot of people that is like processing emotions intellectually is like how you sort through them. And I feel like that's something that like friends and lovers and need to discuss.
This is why I'm always so interested in asking people what role do they think they play in their friendships or close relationships, and what archetype do you fall into? Because I feel as though we're in a similar space where for so long we've been regarded as like the person to give advice, the person to help. So if somebody's coming to us with a solution, the expectation is that we help them fix it, which very rarely is the case. I mean, I personally feel like my closest friends don't come to me wanting advice. They come to me to like just connect and build intimacy. Because I've assumed that role, and maybe it's like the main character energy being like, they need me to help them, so I'm going to help them. That you would much rather step into your self-prescribed role than step out of that role and be what the situation requires.
Oh my God. I just had a really long conversation with a friend of mine about this, where they were like, listen, like, they came to me to set a boundary. They were like, yo, like, I'm just like overwhelmed by everything that's going on in your life right now. Like, I actually can't help you. And like, now I'm just feeling overwhelmed and tired. And I feel like you put me in this position where like, I have to help you with all. And I'm like, whoa, wait, I never expected help. Like, I never wanted that or expected that. I just actually wanted a sounding board. And then, we just had this aha moment where it's like, the assumptions that because the role that she usually plays in all of her other relationships is like being the solution person, she assumed that role in our relationship too, when like I never even wanted that to begin with. So it is like such an important thing to ask yourself, like, what role do I play in my relationships and do I need to? Like, a lot of people are driving themselves mad playing roles they think they have to play, when in reality, you actually just don't.
Wow, look at this growth.
Right?
It's just the wildest thing. I really, I don't know. It all sounds so self-explanatory, but, you know, days move too quickly for us to slow down and be like, wait a second. Is this thing that I've done every day out of habit because I'm used to it, not because it's beneficial, a beneficial thing to keep on doing? And also, I've been thinking about how attached we get to like ideas of who we are. And so, for example, like I was speaking to a friend of mine who is a musician, and we were speaking about how it's really like nerve-wracking to be invited to go on a shoot where somebody else is styling us or doing our hair and makeup, because it's always got to be something. It's always got to be like a white woman who's so confident in doing black makeup, and then she puts like an ashy foundation on me and a green yeah. eyeshadow and a pink lip and calls it a day. Or it's a stylist who's so confident in styling people like me who wear color or, you know, androgynous shapes, and then she brings me a size, you know, like four sizes too small, and is like, can we make it work? So like, so much of us is, we're just fighting against this idea of like, we don't want someone to have control over what we look like because they won't do us justice. Yes. And so then we're exploring the idea of like, well, what if they don't do us justice? Like, does it actually matter? And not in those situations where they're completely disregarding like our skin tone or our size, but in instances where like someone's put us in a color we wouldn't wear or an aesthetic we wouldn't wear, and we're yeah. taking it so personally. It's like, is that really a helpful thing to you? And similar with personalities, I really get frustrated when people that I don't spend a lot of time with or haven't seen since I was like a very, very like early adult, obnoxious, externalizing everything type bitch, who still want to tie me to those ideas, like who don't see the growth or the maturity because we're not in that environment for it to be seen.
Yeah.
And it's like, I get so offended. I'm like, why don't you see that I've changed? But it's like, yeah. who cares? Like, yeah. doesn't even matter. You're such a small priority. You're such a small character in their story. Like, get over yourself. It doesn't matter. As long as you know you're working on it.
No, that's so true. I think about this too. Like, there's so many things that we care about as far as other people's perceptions of us and why. Like, but that is something that I had to interrogate a lot. Like, when I lived in LA and I would do like shoots and stuff, and of course I'd be on set and the makeup artist would have no idea what to do with my skin tone or with my hair. And then I'd be upset because I'm the one bitch that looks ugly. And then I'd be like, but why are you upset that you look ugly? Like, why can't you just be ugly with your chest and know that it has nothing to do with you? And that's that. Like, why are things personal? Yeah.
Why are things personal? It's a lot. It gets easier. Do you know what I've been doing recently? I used to, I think maybe it was like, let's say last year for a timeline, and I was talking to one of my closest friends about how sometimes it feels a bit counterintuitive to be doing any self-improvement if you're not going to encourage your closest people to also improve as you're improving.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise you just get sort of pulled back into these like less than savory or toxic behaviors because you haven't expressed that you're trying to change. And if you don't put context behind your actions, people won't know to also meet you at that level. And so I was kind of thinking like, what does it look like to set the expectation that you are changing, and not to expect that of your friends and family, but to set the precedent and to see if that leading by example changes everything, you know, because one thing to be like, this is what I'm working on, but how can I show these skills if you aren't meeting me at that level, or you don't have the visibility of what it looks like for me to be improving in that way? So for example, if you're working on conflict resolution with your best friend, and you're saying to yourself, you know what, I'm going to stop being overly intellectual. I'm going to stop philosophizing everything, and I'm going to be really human, and I'm going to be empathetic. But your friend doesn't know that you are actively trying to do this. So then they see that your change in behavior is disingenuous or condescending. So then they're like confused by why you're not behaving the way you usually behave. And there's all this tension and friction. So it's almost like airing out and being like, I'm making this change. I'm working on this thing. And suddenly your actions and behaviors are consumed through a lens that's like favorable to the change that you're trying to make.
Holy shit. That is... Do you think it's, how do I frame this question? Do you think it's possible to sustain a relationship where you're growing in different directions?
Absolutely.
How?
Well, I think it would be maybe not naive, but it wouldn't be giving the two people the benefit of the doubt to assume that just because you aren't growing in the exact same direction, those directions can't be compatible in some way, unless they're fundamentally incompatible. Like someone's like, I'm going off the grid. I'm going to be an anarchist. I'm living in a commune with four people. And you're like, actually, yeah. I want to get promoted. I want to stay, you know, in the big city. I want to do those yeah. things. Then I mean, like, fundamentally, you're choosing to go in separate minds. Paths that you know that conflict. But I think there is a lot more room for fluidity than we give people credit for. And I think it's because a lot of people only have very traditional, defined archetypes, roles, and goals to align themselves with. So to right. like remove yourself from that and then to now choose what path you want to go on is very tricky. And I also think that very few people have the luxury of leading a life with like no clear direction with somebody else. So, you know, like one person in a two-person relationship, it's going to be very uncomfortable for you. Like, I don't know what I want to do. Maybe I want to go here. Maybe I want to go there. Maybe like, I don't want to be with anyone. Maybe I don't want to have kids. Maybe I want kids. They kind of, people need that kind of sense of security and steadfastness to be like, are you sane? Are we going to do this thing together? Are we going to break up tomorrow? Will you be there? You're like, I don't really know. I'm just trying to vibe out whatever. That's a little bit different. But if it's two people with semi-defined interests for their lives being like, I don't know, like maybe I want to try something different, but I don't know what that is. And you're like, maybe I want to try something different, but I don't know what that is. All right, well, let's just see if those things can be compatible in some way.
Yeah. And I think I get what you mean.
But I think like people have to be a lot more accommodating than they realize. And I think a lot of us need to detach from these very conventional ways of like living our lives because they're only really causing us pain.
Talk about it. No, literally the way that we step on our own necks every day in the name of tradition, in the name of romantic love, it's actually disgusting. No, I cannot. I've been questioning a lot of the things that I do lately. One of the things that I'm questioning is, do I need to be life partners with my romantic partner? And why? Mm. Like, why is that a social norm? Because it's along the lines of this conversation that we're having about whether you can grow, whether you can maintain a relationship with someone where you're growing in this, in the same, in different directions. And I agree with what you're saying, but I also think it requires a level of detachment from each other's lives. I think that like once two people merge into one,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're now forced to go in one direction as opposed to like giving each other the freedom to grow in your different directions. And I often wonder, like, is it really sustainable for your romantic partner to also be your life partner? For like the person that you're trying to cultivate and maintain desire to also be the person that you're trying to cultivate and maintain stability and security? Like, is it really?
Probably not, but this we know.
Yeah, you know, like, and yet we
romance
really
is a scam.
Cling.
We know this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we cling also because I think only so many parts of our lives can be in disarray. There needs to be a like we not everything can be up for discussion at the same time, ready to discombobulate, like one
no
thing
facts.
At a time.
Yeah, yeah. No,
so,
literally.
Like, your unconventionality might start. Maybe you take a recreational drug. Maybe you quit your 9-to-5. Maybe you travel around the world. Like, but all at the same time, who knows? Maybe you know, delve into non-monogamy. Maybe you become a surrogate. These are all things that could happen. But like for a sense of stability, it's best to do a few things at a time. And I think that the romance conversation, it kind of breaks off. It's multi-pronged because we're not just talking about romance. We're talking about like life milestones. We're talking about conventional success. We're talking about options for the future. We're talking about living. It's like too much, too much for now, too much.
Yeah. for you, what is your ideal format of romance? Like, if you could deconstruct romance, throw it out the window, and then come up with your own structure and your own format, like, what would that look like?
I like that monogamy in romance has a sense of, like, not, it's not the commitment I'm necessarily interested in, but the idea that you are almost obligated to show up for the other person. Like, that is now your duty to be not only the best you can be for yourself, but also for this person who is intrinsically now tied to you in some capacity. So like, it's not that the single partner thing, I'm like indifferent, but I do like the fact that it's like, oh, like you're my focus and I'm your focus. But I don't like that with conventional monogamy, it stops at that.
Right.
Like, in order for you to have what seems to be a successful relationship, it must be Bonnie and Clyde, me and you, one-on-one, forever and ever.
Yeah.
And every decision I make is with you in mind. Every decision you make is with me in mind. And we don't make decisions unless they're both aligned. That's all just too much. I think that what I like about single partnership is this sense of, like almost like this sense of calm, like this place you come back to when outside gets too much. Like, this is my sense of normalcy, my sense of calm, my sense of home. But also I feel as though what conventional monogamy is missing is that freedom to also be a whole person. Like, there's so much compromise that needs to happen in order to...
I hate compromise. Yeah.
It's just not for me. And it just doesn't make sense to me that we could now crown a person to be our person, but not have the freedom to still live a full life that we would have lived without them. And
facts.
People would argue that your life maybe wouldn't have been full if you were craving partnership. But I feel as though having a partner should mean with this security and with this like guaranteed love and affection, and with this person I'm now committing to doing life with, I have the breadth and the bandwidth and the range to do whatever I want because there's still a sense of normalcy here. And the new partner can facilitate that life that you want to live.
Yes.
And I feel like the issue with like conventional or like mainstream monogamy is that like if, as you were mentioning before, if the life paths aren't going in the exact same direction at the exact same time, and if the two aren't facilitating the vision exactly as needed, then it must be a failed relationship. Like, where is the range? Where is it? You don't even have to go into full non-monogamy to apply some sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Like, release the shackles a little bit. Like,
honestly, honestly, that's like something I've realized. Okay, this is in part corona. Like, being on lockdown has made me realize, like, corona forced me to be a lot more monogamous than I'm actually able to be. And it also made me realize that for me to, because I really value and love and appreciate romance, like, I need romance in my life. But I go mad when I expect all of my romantic needs to be met by one person. And I realized that for me to be able to fully enjoy romance, I need to diversify my romantic portfolio. So like, I need to be more romantic to myself. My friendships need to be more romantic. My romantic partner needs to be romantic. Like, I need romance from all facets, not all, but a lot of facets of my life in order for me to fully appreciate it. And that is like a shackle that we don't allow ourselves to have. Like, I miss being a hoe and like also, but also just like flirting with random strangers. Like, it's like, why do we imprison ourselves? I don't understand. Like, for what? Just to feel special? Like, why must we feel special?
Like I said, there's too much happening in life for people to now start interrogating the things that should be simple.
Yeah.
Like, relationships and what they are and what they stand for have just been a tale as old as time. I don't think a lot of us are ready to start pulling that apart in favor of a more unconventional way of doing those things. It's very interesting, though, because... I feel like when we talk about like alternative monogamy or whatever you want to call it, because when I speak about like this non-monogamy, it's because the things that I want a partner for, or not even need, but the things that I would want romance for or a partner for are far different than what I'm finding a lot of like my peers want partners for. So oh, like,
what's the
for
difference?
Me, like that, remember the episode we did on hookup culture, right?
Yeah.
That was a big turning point for me to like reevaluate my relationship towards sex, right? So up until that point, sex is like was so much more than a tool for enjoyment. It was a power exchange, it was a dominance thing, it was a security thing, it was a almost like an establisher. Like, because I can do this thing and do it well, that means I'm established in this arena. And then now, like how a year later, I'm like, you know what? Like, my libido is not even that high. Like, there are so many other things that I find interesting than having sex and being a sexual partner.
Yeah.
So when I talk about non-monogamy, I'm very much not interested in sleeping with anybody else. Like, the thought, I can't be bothered. Not the sex itself, but, like, how feverish, like, hookup culture is.
Yeah.
Is not for me.
It's very time-consuming, too.
Yeah. It's very, like, indulgent and like like you've got to feed it's a beast you got to keep feeding into like you're feeding your ego, you're feeding your security, you're feeding your looks. It's too much. I'm not interested. What I do like is this room to like explore romance with people, because I think romance is fun, and that's I like what it looks like to show someone you care. This is why I love Grace so much. Grace is my whole soulmate. Completely, like, platonic in the sense that I will never want to root her. But I love her so much. I'm like, who else can I give that to? You know, like, I want to do more of that. I want those exchanges where, like, I'm Grace's whole soulmate. She's my whole soulmate. And the commitment off the charts. So, like,
love
the focus
that.
Is... I'm so committed to her wellness, physical, mental, emotional, as she is mine. I'm like, where else can I get this? This is so gratifying.
Honestly.
The sex component of relationships, boring. Even this idea of being sexually attracted to people, boring. So over.
No, I feel literally so banal, so inconsequential. Yes! Like,
who cares? Everybody's hot. Like, we could root anyone. But this,
honestly,
like, this feeling of being like, oh, I gotta show up for this person because I care about them. Like, I want them to live a good, wholesome life. I want to facilitate that. What do you need? Let me help. That's fun to me. So I'm like, surely, how many? I want to do that with everyone. I don't want to be limited by gender.
Right? Or like limited by. Yeah. No, that is exactly how I've been feeling. Like, so all of the love I have inside me, I must limit to this one person. Why? Like, why can't I love on everyone and be like romantic with everyone? And it's absurd.
And I also now, and I think I wouldn't, this is the good thing about us having this platform to discuss things, because if not for this, so many of the thoughts I have about things would remain minor thoughts. Like, we have spoken about so many things at length. It's so good for us. And the other thing about there's too much to critique about like romance. Too much. And like romance in like a very generic relationship sense. I'm like, this, why is everybody stressed in relationships? Why are we constantly trying to fix things? Why
honestly.
Can't I just leave people alone? Like, why does someone have to be the way that I would like them to be? And I think it's because the stakes feel so much higher when the person is your partner.
Oh my, I was literally about to say this. Like,
why can't I just let you live? Like, why do I need to be breathing down your neck talking about what are your goals? Whatever. Relax.
Why? I was literally about to say this. We're like, why do we spend more time trying to fix our relationships as opposed to just enjoying? And it's because of expectations. It is truly like, it's just because we expect so much from one person. And the only reason we expect so much from one person is because we feel the need to feel special. Like, we want to feel like I'm this one person's everything, and they are my everything. And we become codependent so that we can delude each other into believing that we are the only one. Like, we are special. But the pursuit of being special is such a delusion, and it's such a distraction from just experiencing being a regular nobody. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like my relationships get so much better the more I embrace that I'm actually not special. I'm just a regular bitch. I'm no one. I'm not, I don't need to be someone's everything, because I can just be someone's one thing, and that's more than enough. And like, that's okay. And when I sit with that and I embrace that, I don't expect the world from anyone. I'm like, it's so much easier for me to accept who someone is, because they can just show up as themselves and I can show up as myself, and they don't need to be anyone or anything for me, because they don't need to be special to me. They can just be.
Amen. There's a word. But again, you know, too much time. Like, for me, I like to compartmentalize based on what's the word I'm looking for? Like, I compartmentalize the priorities in my life based on statistic positive return, you know? Yeah. So like, I like hanging out with myself a lot because statistically the returns are always positive. I don't get bored. I don't fight with myself. Yeah. I'm just here hanging out, having a good time. I'm dancing, I'm smiling, I'm singing, I'm playing my games, I'm making things. It's great. Work. Statistically, positive return takes too much energy. Why girl work if girl want to leisure all the time? Why girl stress about money if girl have money? Why girl don't holiday and instead girl work? Silly girl. But you don't have time to think about that right now. Similar to relationships. Why girl heterosexual? Is girl heterosexual?
Truly,
why girl not explore more things? Why girl think too much about relationship? Why girl spend 1 year talking about dating on podcast? Why?
No, literally.
Why girl not garden if girl like flowers? Why girl not go to rainforest if girl like trees?
like, oh wow, these are the questions.
Too many things to focus on.
Oh my god, literally. At this point in your life, what do you want from your friendships? Okay, wait, let me contextualize why I'm asking you this. Do you think that you are able to have a more fulfilling romantic relationship because you have Grace, and like, your relationship with Grace is so lit that like, you don't expect the world from your man?
Literally, I have 5 friends that I would actually do anything for. Just 5. I'm not allowing space for any more. 5 is the cap. And then like, I alternate, like 2 of them will leave and another 2 will come in. But like, it's still the same pool of people I've known for 10 years. Nothing's changing. And that to me is the only reason why I feel as though I have the range to put less pressure on romance, because not because it, you know how some people are kind of like, I'll give this relationship my 110, and if it doesn't work, I'll just go back to my friends. I'm like, no, I have my friends. So I already have an indication of what it is, what it feels like to be treated really well, what it feels like to be really loved, what it feels like to, I mean, I don't think it's not unconditional, but what it feels like to feel intrinsically responsible for somebody else's well-being and vice versa. And that to me puts, It doesn't like take the pressure off romantic relationships, but it puts a lot of context. Like, I'm not making up these roles and responsibilities in my head. Like, I have them. So you just need to replicate what I've already experienced. Like, you know, like with Grace, like there's no pressure for Grace to be anything for me or anything for her, but there's an intrinsic responsibility to like hold each other down. Like, I got you. Whatever you need. That's so freeing. Yeah. You know, that even if you don't have your best interest in mind, someone there is like, whoa, babes, go outside and get some oxygen. And you're like, babes,
no, I that's do. So healthy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
There's something about, I don't know, there's also, I was talking to my boyfriend the other day, and I was like, I just can't, I think what I'm struggling with as an adult is that I just can't get over the fact that in any sense, women are not the weakest link. And I just feel like whenever I look at like a man, I'm like, weak link, weak link.
Yeah, and so, no, that's me.
But I don't even think it's not something I've learned recently. It's just from growing up in a matriarchy and not having like in all the male representation in my family was just like below women.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't default to men in any way. And like there just weren't a lot of men in my immediate family and my extended family. It was like the women all just ran shit. So I feel like when I think about my romantic relationships, I feel like the men are almost always operating from, I don't know what the correct word to use is, but like kind of like a handicap in the sense that like, I'm not going to respect you as much as I respect a woman. So like sense of like someone like Grace was like, babes, log off, go outside, get some air.
Yeah.
Go and meditate. I'm like, yes, babe, you're so smart. If any of my boyfriends told me to do that,
I'm going to beat the shit on site.
Excuse me?
It's on site.
Excuse me?
that is literally me.
Hold on. So you're telling me how I should live. Let me tell you.
Oh my. That is literally me. That is. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So there's also that.
No, I feel the same, but it's also just objective fact. Like, I don't know. How many men have you met who weren't the weakest link? Like,
and it's not even like, it's not even that I'm a misandrist, because I definitely don't think that men are less than. It's like, if given a circumstance where I had to rely on a woman or just a non-male, I would far choose that in any circumstance.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for my safety, for my security, for creativity, for inspiration.
No, absolutely.
Like I would just always default to a non-male. And I just assume, I think the characteristics that I apply to non-male are always more positive than men, which I think is really interesting as well. And it's unfortunate because it's not something I'm actively working on. It's not something I'm actively working on changing. And I feel as though this is a lot of, it's holding somebody, it's like punishing someone for existing in some capacity. And it's not, but it's not an active thing for me. It's a passive thing. Like it's almost so I have to like check myself and be like, you just didn't like that because it was coming from him. But if it came from her, it'd be more, I'm like, yeah, you know, you're right, brain. That's true.
I'm exactly the same, but I don't know that it's something I'm ever going to work on. I think I might actually be a misandrist, but at the same time, I don't believe in misandry because I think it's like reverse racism where I'm like, can I really be a misandrist towards you when your foot is on my neck? So I do think that men are... I think that cishet men are at the bottom of the food chain and non-men are just celestial, incredible beings. I don't know. Yeah, like every day I question, like, do I believe in gender equality? Like, why should women and non-binaries pretend to be equal to men when their foot is on our necks? Like, why are we doing that? So it's something that I'm the same. I don't want to be told anything by a man. Whenever a man opens his mouth, I'm like, sorry, why are you speaking? Who said you could do that? Excuse me. This is offensive. But it definitely hinders my ability to love men romantically. Because I do think a part of loving someone is being able to take critique. But I just cannot bring myself to be critiqued by a man. By a man? Nah. We're going to fight. Like, square up.
You're wild.
It's wild.
Do you know what I do love, though?
Yeah.
I love, love, love bro culture. And let me tell you.
Really? There's something, why?
Yeah, there's something about it. I feel as though it's just so baggageless. Like to walk into an environment, recognize someone who you identify with purely because you perceive them to be male and then like have an affinity for them. Like it's like, I see it and I'm like, this is wild. Like you just, both of you just like sports and now you're hugging.
I know.
And now you're like, this is your person because you just like the same sport. Or like the sense of comfort. I know.
Can you believe it? Yeah.
Like when I walk into some environment and like, automatically it seems to get segregated, or like, yeah, segregated by gender, you know, or like how people are perceived to identify. And then it's yeah. like the quote unquote men are over here, the women are over here. And I'm like, why is the energy so good over there? How yeah. are you laughing already? Why are we laughing? I want to laugh too.
Yeah.
And then over here, we're trying to like gather details and like ask questions. Like, you know, so what do you do? Oh, okay, cool. Like,
yeah. Like, do much. do you believe in this idea that like male friendships are just easier and like more fun and
I think they're low risk, low reward. Like yeah. you're definitely not getting much out of it, but it seems fun.
Yeah, it's like it's stress free.
Yeah. I would much rather the kind of dynamics I have now with women. It's kind of like the stakes. The investment is higher, the stakes are higher, but it's almost always worthwhile because, yeah. like, we're coming from the same... It's generally, the approach is very similar. But you see, like, isn't it... So I find it really interesting to talk to just, like, heterosexual men who don't have, like, non-male friends who are just so excited to just talk about how they feel and what they
yeah.
think and why they yeah. think it. And it's always like, it's like that same, we were talking about it in our dating episodes, but it's so easy for like us to make men feel special in that environment because yes. we're just asking them questions and that's yeah. getting internalized. It's like, oh my goodness, you care. It's like, oh no, it's just conversation, babe. So like yeah. That part of manhood seems very difficult. I'm like, I wish you could change that for yourself. Because I can't do that.
But, yeah. And they really can too. Like they really
yeah,
could.
Just in a really juvenile sense, I like bro culture. Not in the misogynist like rape culture way, but just in the like, oh, so simple. Like
yeah,
you just see someone who you perceive yeah. to be your gender and now you're like loving up.
I know. And it's just that simple. Yeah. I think my New Year's resolution in 2021 is to make more male friends. But like close male friends, I have male friends, but they're not deep, and I need like authentic men in my life. Like, I think similarly to you, I grew up in a family with a lot of women, and that has colored my perception on men quite badly too. Like, there's just so many women in my family. There's like. I have a lot of aunts, like all of my cousins. I have one male cousin, like everyone else is a girl. So I think my perception of men has definitely been colored by that. And also just like the cultural context of being South African, where there's such a high femicide rate and like the men just don't respect women and the masculinity is so toxic. And there's so much like generational trauma that's not being addressed by Black men in South Africa. Like there's so much. Where, like, my perception of men has definitely been colored by the violence that I've experienced or, like, seen from men. But I want to just... I want to manifest some wholesome men in my life. Like, I want to see if it's true. I want to see if it's possible.
I'm sure there are a ton who listen to this podcast who are also in New York.
Oh, my
Maybe
God.
Maybe not a ton, but yeah. at least 10.
Yeah. If you are a non-woman... and you live in New York and you listen to this podcast, let's be friends. Let's all go hang out in the park and do shrooms. Like, let's do it.
That sounds really nice.
Right?
Did we talk about when we did shrooms yet? Have we talked about that?
No. So that's going to be our next episode. Yeah. We need to talk about shrooms. Yes. Okay. We have hit the 1 hour mark. So we'll cut it off here. And our next episode will be about shrooms and drugs and whether or not drugs are bad. I actually really want to discuss that. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. Find us on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. Follow us at Bobo and Flex. We also have a Patreon where you can get ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else. So subscribe to our Patreon and we'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.
Farewell.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.